Hello, and welcome to Walking with the Tengu, a podcast exploring classic texts for the modern martial artist. We're back a bit quicker than usual today, as we continue our walk through the Budo Shoshinshu. Today, Daidoji Yuzan gives us some rapid-fire bits of advice across a few chapters. I decided, since they were largely just little nuggets of wisdom all related to travel, I'd lump them all together into one quick episode. As we were getting towards the end of the book, I imagine he had some notes of various things to write about, and he had little collections of similar bits of advice that maybe didn't merit an entire chapter on their own. So he put them together into chapters with other related bits of advice. So today, we're going to pull out what wisdom we can from two chapters about advice for samurai who are traveling. In the first chapter, Daidoji has some advice about horsemanship. Way back at the beginning of the podcast, there was a chapter about horses, and I recall thinking, well, there's no way I'll be able to relate this to the martial arts. However, I went ahead and read it anyway, and as it turned out, that was one of my favorite chapters. You never know where you'll be able to pull out little pieces of wisdom, even from the most unlikely places. Daidoji starts off by telling us that when we're on a journey, if we're unimportant, we may have to ride a pack horse. Now, I assume this is the ancient version of not having a fancy car to show off while traveling around. It was a solid workhorse that got the job done, but no one was impressed with it. Daidoji says that even if this is the way things are, we are to, quote, ride securely. He explains the point of this is so that the sheaths of the long and short sword are not supposed to come off, even if we fall off our horse. The point is that we're supposed to be doing things the right way, with proper preparation. When training, it means making sure your gear is properly secured, be it your uniform, if you have one, or perhaps the bag you brought your equipment in, off to the side so it's not in other people's way. Daidoji says that if you tie your sword to your spear to make sure that falling out of your belt doesn't happen, it actually makes you look shallow. That you're just doing it for appearance's sake rather than doing things the right way the first time, basically covering up sloppiness, and I assume here a certain amount of combat readiness. He points out that back in his day, when you were traveling, they would see the crest of who you worked for on your gear, and people would judge the rest of that group by your sloppiness. In today's martial arts world, it works the same. If you are sloppy while visiting another school, or visitors to your own school see the lack of care and attention to detail that the members of the school exhibit, they may rightly make some assumptions about the character of the people in that school. It's not hard to figure out where a person trains in this day and age, and then judge not only you, but your school and possibly style by your choices, actions, and behavior. If someone showed up to a school with an unwashed uniform, sloppily put on their gear, or otherwise took care of themselves in a careless way, it's not a big leap to think that such a person might be just as careless with their training partner. If we do things the right way, the first time, or at the very least, learn from our mistakes, we show our training partners that we care about everyone's training and safety. So apparently, the travel norm back in Daidoji's day was to transfer horses at mutually agreed-upon times. Daidoji suggests even if the pack horse driver calls for a swap, if you are traveling with someone who is a warrior, I assume here he means a higher-ranked warrior, that one should wait until you've determined if this other person is actually going to dismount and swap before dismounting yourself. If this other person refuses and there's no exchange of horses, then you'll just have to mount the same horse again and will have gone to all that trouble for nothing. This one took me a while to think about. What I eventually got from it was to pay attention to what others are doing around you. We don't always need to be told, and we also don't always need to do immediately what we are told. When training, especially when in a new or different school, keep a finger on the so-called pulse of the room and go with that flow. If someone says to do something and all the regulars aren't immediately doing it, maybe wait a moment to see what's going on. In some sense, then, I take from this to remain conscious in the present moment, not just blindly reacting to whatever comes along. There might be more here that I'm missing, but that's what I've got at the moment. So let me know if there's something more or if you have something different to be taken from this lesson. The next travel example Daidoji takes us to is when one is sent as a messenger on a long trip. He makes the point that even though it is more expensive, one should hire porters for crossing rivers when the water is high. It would be quite the problem if the horses were to fall mid-crossing, getting all the gear wet, and potentially injuring the servants, all because we were too stingy to pay for some porters to help with the crossing. I take from this that when doing things, we really should take into consideration the safety of the endeavor first. For martial artists, this means to me that we should take the time to care for and maintain our gear. Our training partners should never be hurt because we didn't take the time to properly maintain our equipment. This includes cleanliness. Washing everything is not only taking care of yourself, but is for the care and safety of your training partners. If your well-worn gear is starting to develop holes or rips, maybe it's time to purchase some new equipment before someone else is hurt. Lastly, Daidoji spends some time talking about taking different boats when traveling, just because the routes were shorter. The examples he used were apparently ones that were out of the ordinary from normal routes, as he says that there will be nothing we can say if unexpected difficulties arise and we're caught taking non-standard boats on our trips. He even quotes a poem, which could be translated as, I'm going to go with William Scott Wilson's translation of it here. Though the crossing at Yabase may be short, in a hurry, warrior, take the long way round, the long bridge at Seta. The bridge at Seta was a sure thing, though one had to travel a bit further south to take it. Boats were a bit riskier back in Daidoji's day, so even though it might be faster and shorter to take the boat across Lake Biwa, apparently it was considered the more responsible act when, in the course of one's duties, one was making travel choices to take the bridge. What I take from this is to not take shortcuts, especially if they are less reliable. I have to just say there's a little comment here at the end of this chapter where Daidoji writes that this not only applies to travel, but also is a general frame of mind in all that a warrior does. He then caps that off by saying that this is also a principle for martial training. While there's no direct evidence that Daidoji thought this about all his chapters, I appreciate this little comment at the end of this chapter, as it meant centuries ago, Daidoji Yuzan was also thinking about how to apply lessons from life to the practice of the martial arts. So for this episode's Tengu Challenge, I would ask that we each spend some time thinking about whether we've applied our attention to detail to our training. Your school or style may encourage this already, but double check that you haven't let any good habits fall to the wayside for the purposes of speed or ease. Then, every once in a while, stop and double check that you've still got a finger on the so-called pulse of the room. Are you off in your own little world, or are you still focused on the present moment and all that's going on around you? Is someone lurking at the door of the school? Is another training partner starting to show signs of exhaustion or injury? Those sorts of things. Double-check your gear and make sure that it has been properly maintained. This will be pretty style-specific, but if you don't know how to maintain your gear properly, ask a senior student for help. If you're in a healthy school, this shouldn't be a problem. Finally, think about if you're taking any shortcuts while training or preparing to train. They might be quicker, but if they're not more reliable, think about going back to the more detailed method of training that has all the little points that make a technique or principle work. You may not need every detail all the time, but when everything is stacked against you, it is those little details that make our training work under less than ideal circumstances. Spend some time thinking on this, and remember to not just talk about your philosophy, but like your martial art, live it. That's all for today. Please help the podcast out by sharing and telling people about it. The best way you can help us is just by letting people know that it's out there and what it's got you thinking about. Thank you for listening, and talk to you again soon.